put on our PJs, build a blanket fort. Let's go inside, get cozy, comfortable. It's not a coincidence, it's a metaphor about how we come together and build a world. And when the convo ends, we break it down and begin again. Sit down, tune in, crank it. It's time to bring your own blanket. Blanket Ninjas.
Welcome to season 2 of Bring Your Own Blanket, a podcast where we get cozy, discuss interesting topics to uplift, inspire, and contribute, all inside a blanket fort. Before we start, let's go over to Janan for a quick message.
Thank you so much, Maria. Oh my gosh, I am just so happy to be here this evening with you guys, or afternoon or morning, depending on when you are listening to this podcast. My name is Janan. The thing I want to tell you is to go to patreon.com/BYOblanket and become one of our patrons. You can do it for as little as $1 a month. It gives you cool swag and it helps out the show. We want to continue making the show because we want to continue changing the world.
Yeah.
So, patreon.com/BYOblanket. Send yourself a reminder on your phone, especially if you're driving. Go and do it. We love you. Back to you, Maria.
Thank you. Like Janan said, my name is Maria. Welcome, everybody, to our podcast.
And I'm Janan. Welcome, everybody, to our podcast.
I welcome you more.
I welcome you times infinity. Okay, so our guest today
is excited.
Yes, a returning guest. You may remember her from episode 1 of season 2. She is the wise, the ever wise,
the one and only.
The one and only Sarah Montross.
Yay!
Hi. We're so happy to have you
back.
I'm so happy to be back.
You're the first episode in the season and now the last.
That's pretty cool.
You are the bookends.
That's pretty cool.
That's quite an honorable spot to be in.
Yes. So for those listeners that did not listen to episode 1 of season 2, tell them about yourself. Introduce.
Well, I'm Sarah Montross.
Hi.
I was Sarah Martin until last year.
But no longer.
Some people might know. Might know me from
Sarah
Martin. I've been teaching at Big since Big opened, and I brought this class. Nancy and I really together created a class called Devotional Flow, which is now called Devotional Practice. And it's a class where I open the class with something about yoga philosophy from any of the different texts, or something that's relevant to the yoga practice anyway. And it's really focused on alignment, not like in a sort of dogmatic way, I hope. I'm moving more in that direction as I get older and get more interested in how we can free ourselves from the alignment ultimately. Then we'll talk a little bit about that. Subject matter.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome. Beyond it.
But so yeah, that's what I do at Big. I also run the 300-hour teacher training. We are launching the third iteration of that. Well, we kick it off. It's already launched, but we kick it off next August. August 2020.
So
strongly recommend it.
Yeah, Maria did it.
Janan's doing it.
I'm doing it next year. I'm
so excited. And so should you, listener.
Yes. Yeah. And if you are a 200-hour registered teacher in Houston, get yourself registered for the big upgrade with Sarah Montross, not Sarah Martin, of Devotional Practice, not Devotional Flow.
And so I'm running that program with Nancy Perry and Giaconda Parker from Austin. We're the core faculty. And then we have some really awesome guest instructors that are coming in. From all over the country. So, yeah, all the information is on the Big website.
BigPowerYoga.com.
Do it.
Also, you know what's really cool? We've had Nancy and Gia here on the podcast.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Right.
So all the core and facilitators for your program have been on this show.
It's exciting.
What an exciting blanket fort we're in.
Very exciting. Yes. Sarah, would you like to introduce our topic for this episode?
Yes. I would like to discuss the last three components of the niyamas. The niyamas are the suggestions for how we interact with or how we manage our own internal practice that are described in the Yoga Sutras. So that's a text that's a couple of thousand years old, and it was authored by Patanjali, who is a sage. And in this book, he lays out a pretty rigorous and very detailed methodology for how we attain self-realization
and or one could say how we quiet the mind and are able to live our lives with more clarity. Sounds pretty good, right? So the yamas and the niyamas are how we interact with the outside world and then how we cultivate our own internal practice.
They are the first two limbs of the eight-limbed practice.
Right, thank you. Yeah, so the eight limbs of yoga is something a lot of people have heard of, and the Sanskrit name for that is Ashtanga yoga, just in case I call it that later. You know what I'm talking about, Ashtanga yoga. So the last three niyamas, and again, that's how we cultivate our internal practice, are tapas.
Insert Spanish food joke.
Okay, yeah, small plates. Spanish small plates. No, not to be confused with that. It's tapas is discipline or sort of zeal for practice.
Fire!
Often burning enthusiasm.
It literally is translated as heat, but that it's really the heat that comes from zeal in practice or discipline.
Mm-hmm. I translate it as
How do you spell that?
S-S-S-S-S-S-S.
Got it.
And a little Z in there somewhere.
Got it.
Yeah.
So tapas, and then the second one that I want to include in the discussion, less so, but it's also important, is svadhyaya. And svadhyaya is another fun-sounding word. And
I love it, yes.
Name a child that someone. Svadhyaya. Yeah.
And it always reminds me of Yaya Mary's, the Greek restaurant over off 610.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what it reminds Maria of? Do it.
No, you told me not to do it.
She's been doing this all day, so it's all stuck in her head. Just do it. She loves me, svadhyaya. She's been doing that all day.
I don't know why.
Sarah's not.
She's not impressed.
No, I think it's cute.
It was one of those nods of, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, all right.
So, anyways. She loves me, svadhyaya.
Svadhyaya is self-study. And traditionally, that really meant study of the scriptures. So study of sacred texts. But now we could, if we take a more liberal definition of that, we might say anything that helps us understand ourselves more deeply and move in the direction of self-realization would be svadhyaya. We'll talk a little bit more about it. And then the third one is Ishvara Pranidhana, a mouthful.
Ishvara Pranidhana.
Yes, and that one means surrender to the divine, right?
Surrender to source.
Yeah,
not sauce, source.
Source. Yeah, because sometimes when you say the big G word, God, it sort of freaks people out, including yours truly. So.
Oh, yeah, I've spent God's my bro, but then so is Muhammad and Jesus, so.
Well,
all the bros.
God is a little more of a
generic
term for all of those. Yeah?
Totally. In English.
In English.
Different words in different languages.
Right. So in the sutras, Ishvara is a very specific word for God.
Ishvara is
a word for more of the impersonal God.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it says surrender to Krishna,
totally,
or Muhammad, or Jesus. Yeah. It's a very I don't like the word generic because it has sort of a negative connotation, I think, but a little more inclusive word for God, so that you could really practice whatever faith that you have, including physics. Right, if you believe in science, then you might insert a different understanding of what Ishvara is, but that would also apply to you.
In Chinese, I think the congruent term for Ishvara is Tao. Mm-hmm. And that's Tao. That's the philosophy of Taoism.
Right, you and I have talked
another
about
episode,
that a
maybe
bit.
Yeah. One day in the future, Taoism fun. And yoga. Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
So anyway, those three things I've really been considering of late because I've had some things come up in my life that have reminded me about surrender, and I have a hard time with it. So I've been sort of interested in that. And my teacher Minorma says if something has heat, then you should follow it, right? Like, so if something creates friction, you got to be interested in why, and go down that path a little bit. So I'm sort of continuing down that a little bit, and I'm interested in what the idea of surrender is for me and in the philosophy and in other people's lives and how it might bring us clarity and also the idea of faith and what that means, what is faith?
Mm-hmm. You know, something that's really interesting to me is if you do a quick Google search about yoga philosophy or meditation or something, again, I don't want to say generic, but broad term like that, The things that you're going to get is always like surrender, blah, 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 or faith in the blah, 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 blah. And it always includes those words that we hear so much, especially in yoga. The actual meaning and understanding and practice of them are just like infinitely bigger than you could possibly find.
Yeah. Like before the show, we were talking about how surrender, you're saying, Sarah, isn't just like, I give up. Man, whatever. I'm just going to lay here.
It's not like, I'm
just going to lay here.
Giving in or...
Yeah. Resignation.
Resignation. That was the word I was looking for. It's not like resignation. Oh, yeah. Fine. I can't do anything. So
yeah.
I just won't do anything at all because it's always coupled with... Well, not always, I suppose. But it is in the niyamas, it's coupled with tapas, right? It's always close to tapas.
Mm-hmm.
And even there are other places in the Yoga Sutras where this idea comes up. We were also talking about this, Janan, before. Like, practice and detachment are the means to still the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Practice and detachment.
Yeah, to be able to do something while also still being detached from the goal of the thing.
Right, the results of it.
Yeah.
And that's also in a text called the Bhagavad Gita.
The Gita.
Which is an earlier text chronologically than the Yoga Sutras. And in that text, certainly there are different paths laid out for practice in the Bhagavad Gita. And one of them is karma yoga, not to be confused with karma, as karma is the results of your actions, essentially, right? But karma yoga is all about renouncing, like acting for action's sake and renouncing the results of your actions.
Mm.
So I think that we see this theme over and over again. And even in earlier in the niyamas, one of the niyamas right before tapas, and again, that's the how we cultivate our personal practice, is santosha, contentment.
Santosha. We talked about with that Eliza on the last episode. Santosha.
We're waiting for it, yes.
And that's how we introduced the word.
Santosha. So santosha, yeah, contentment. Yeah. So, but it's not just like, again, resignation. Mm. It's coupled with tapas always, right? So it's like the cultivating contentment, but working towards a goal.
Yeah. Baron called it, you were about to take your inhale to speak. I was training last week with Baron Baptiste, and he talked about santosha quite a bit for it being a Baptiste training, which we usually don't talk about Sanskrit terms, but he brought it up like twice a day. And toward the end, someone was confused about what they're supposed to do. And he's like, well, santosha isn't contentment and then you stop. It's contentment and you're also unsatisfied. And the person was like, scratched their head, just like, whoa. I got it in my bones what he means, and it's still challenging to describe in English.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think it's challenging to describe detachment or non-attachment.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard to, because I'm still trying to suss that out for myself.
Like,
what does that even mean to me? But I think that is going off topic slightly, but it relates to the detachment and the surrender component. Where I see that really tangibly is when I teach yoga.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, I'm going to deliver the best class I can deliver.
Mm.
And then I have to let go of what I perceive to be the result of it.
Yep.
Like I can't be like, oh, what's that person in the corner? They're making a face. Do they hate this?
Yeah.
Or like a teacher will come in and I'm like, oh, I hope this is challenging enough for them. Or I know people's practices because I've been teaching a long time. So sometimes I get like... Sometimes I can get in my head about making sure I deliver the best class for everybody.
Yeah.
But
totally.
You know, and that's not detachment.
Because I do that too, obviously. I teach yoga as well. And I realize now, like sitting here in this moment, because Nancy, the owner of Big Power Yoga, has been coming to my classes more recently because she's now back from maternity leave. And every time she comes in, I'm just like, what's Nancy going to think? Oh, no. And that takes me out of the present and puts me into the future, which is following a mind fluctuation and not actually like being and acting from what I know is true within
me. Well, and that's also not detachment, right? That's attachment to a result.
Yeah, I'm like too attached to something that's maybe going to happen in the future. And in that attachment, it pulls me right off my center.
Well, and I think, too, something to remember in that moment for me and you, it sounds like, is there's some sort of magic in the practice of yoga that just happens regardless of who's teaching it or how, quote, good it is or, quote, challenging or not challenging it is. I think that people just being on their mat with their breath, there's some sort of alchemy that happens every time.
Yeah.
And it may not be a happy alchemy. like you may be rubbing up against something, or somebody may rub up against something that is not pleasant.
You experience a tapas,
right? Yeah,
tapas
isn't necessarily physical, and in fact, I find more often than not, it's not. It's actually mental or emotional or spiritual tapas. Mm.
I think in practice specifically, like practicing asana, we always say, or I, in my experience, it's always like, oh no, it's my knee because of that one injury, so I should back off, when it's not really about my knee. Mm. Or it's not really about whatever.
Right.
Whatever excuse I'm using in that moment, or whatever story I'm using, it's always something that creates, again, the heat, that like fiery, like, ugh.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't want to deal with it when I'm on
this
rectangle.
Because I have an old injury in my left hip from many years of soccer and taekwondo and kicking with one foot only. Uh-huh. So when I get to my mat and I get to the poses that aren't that fiery, like the seated ones or the just the ones that stretch my hips.
Those to me are the biggest.
Yeah, like I definitely then will get an emotional tapas that I can get taken out of by like having. Basically, when I sit through my physical tapas space, like discomfort or an actual, I'm just like turned on and fired on by, not turned on like that, but like fired on in terms of like I've been moving basically and undistracted. It's through the physical tapas that I can finally access the mental, emotional, and then eventually the spiritual.
Right.
That in a different way than when I'm just seated in a cold room in meditation, having not warmed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Well, that's why.
That's why we do this, man.
Right, and that's why not that the eight limbs are necessarily sequential, because they're almost like spokes.
On a wheel.
On a wheel. Well, it depends who you talk to. I've seen different.
True.
I do think that it's hard to, no, I'm not going to say that. Let me just put a pin in that for a second. Okay, so let's say it's spokes on a wheel. And they're laid out in a specific order in the text. And Patanjali doesn't like randomly put things on a list.
No.
They're usually
first thought of
in an order on purpose. So I think the yamas and niyamas are going to be my constant work, really.
Yeah.
And it goes yamas, how we interact with the outside world. Niyamas, how we cultivate our personal practice.
Asana,
physical, then breath awareness, energy awareness, pranayama, then dharana, pratyahara, sense withdrawal, and then dharana, which is concentration, then dhyana, which is meditation, and then it's samadhi, which is complete absorption in the infinite. So according to that practice, you would need it's for the people who need the path of practice, which is Ashtanga yoga.
Yeah.
Right, if the eight limbs, for people who need that practice, you got to move through the stuff in your body. It might be useful to do that first.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you. I have a hard time just sitting down and meditating. My mind is not.
Well, we live in we talked about this right before the episode started too, that the way our society is built now is we are mostly, what is it called when you don't move? Not sentient. That's the wrong word. Not docile. I'm close.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
Sedentary.
Sedentary.
Yeah, we don't move as much as people used to move back when you had to farm your own food. And, you know, you couldn't live unless you actually did things with your hands. Now we're just kind of on our phones and talking to people mostly. Not everyone in the world, but a pretty good chunk of the world, especially
culturally.
The Western.
Yeah, the people who most likely are listening to this podcast, you most likely are not a farmer or a carpenter or something like that. So because we're not actually using our bodies most of the time, like that's why I've experienced a big, wave of asana getting popular, because it's just like the antidote to all this freaking internet and talking stuff that we do.
It's like exercise in general,
right. I think exercise in general is that. And the thing that makes it yoga is it's within the framework of the yamas and niyamas, right? And we're actually, when yoga, we're interested in moving towards self-realization. We're not simply trying to
get ripped.
Right. And you know, I think you can practice any physical modality from a yogic perspective.
Yeah, I think you can. I run trying to be nice to myself while I'm doing it.
Right. And I think you can get clarity from running. Like, I do think that some sort of. And it's not meditation. I don't think running is meditation. I think you can get a little clearer.
The people that say that, I'm like, how? I'm trying not to, like.
Well, it might be dharana or sense withdrawal. You know, like, there might be some sort of clarity that comes. I don't know. We're probably going to get a lot of comments from runners. Anyway,
the runners are going
to
be like, nah.
So if we go back to this idea that there's the path of the physical path of practice, I just threw my hair tie at you when I was gesticulating with my hand. But there it's you go. Okay. Oh, there it was. It was white, and you found it on that cream carpet.
Well, I have drishti.
All that drishti.
But then there's this other path that's laid out in the Yoga Sutras that's the path of surrender, and that is a more direct path.
Yeah. What's that one called?
Ishvara Pranidhana, essentially. Because it comes up, so that word comes up in the first chapter of the Yoga Sutras, and it says, you can do these things or surrender to God, Ishvara.
Yeah.
Then it lays out some qualities of Ishvara and some sort of types of samadhi, and then it goes into the second chapter where we get these methods of practice, which are... One could say probably less direct and easier for some of us, like Westerners in particular, who we need a little more clearing in order to be able to move into the more inward states of yoga.
Like
concentration and meditation.
Yeah.
Things like that. Yeah. So last Thanksgiving, I was talking to a guest at the Thanksgiving dinner we were at, and he was saying that we were having another conversation. I don't even know how we got on this particular thread. He said, about a year and a half ago, my mind got quiet. And I'm in a particular place right now where I feel like my mind is less quiet than it's been. And I'm getting quite like frustrated by it because I'm supposed to be progressing on the path and I teach people about these techniques, but I feel a little bit like a fraud because I'm having challenges right now with my mind. And so when he said that, I was like, tell me all your secrets, you know? And he was this big sort of burly Texan guy. And he was like, I just rediscovered my spiritual practice. And he said, I'm not into necessarily all the dogma of it, but I went back to church and I started rediscovering my spirituality. And then all of a sudden my mind got quiet. And I was like, that's Ishvara Pranidhana.
and he's like, yep, little lady, it sure is.
I was like, well. And then I related it to this. I'm in this course right now with my teacher, Christina Sell. And it's all about finding time in the busy holiday season to do a little practice, even if it's like 5 to 15 minutes a morning. And what the first one she posted was this mantra practice to Ganesha, who is the Hindu deity of, well, he places obstacles and he also removes them.
And he looks like an elephant-headed guy.
Yeah, a lot
guy.
Of people know Ganesh. He's very cute. He's got a big tummy.
We have 5 or 6 Ganeshas at home.
We have a ton of them,
Right. He's popular and he... anyway, this mantra, when she said something, let me try to remember this and do justice to it, but she said that when she learned it at her guru's ashram, he said something like, you're not a Hindu, but you can certainly pray to Ganesh. And essentially what you're doing when you are doing so, one of the things you're doing is you are admitting, or not admitting, that's not the word I'm looking for, you're acknowledging that you're suffering. And you are laying your suffering at the feet of Ganesh and then knowing it will be handled. Mm. And then I that really resonated with me deep in my bones. Like to be able to let go. And I think that's the thing that's causing me so much challenge right now with my mind, because I've forgotten how to let go and, you know, detach and surrender. And instead I'm doing, because my days have gotten so busy that all I do is check off my to-do list. And I think I'm in charge of everything.
Mm. It's a very Western thing that we do, though.
Of course, I mean, I think so.
Right. It's like, hey, I got to sign up for this class. I got to go do this. I got to go buy this thing. I got to go
like
run this errand.
It's almost like you
can
even check your meditation off the list.
Meditate. And then, yes.
And sit there. Timer. Go.
Internal practice. Contemplation. Go. Check.
Yeah.
You know.
I said my mantras. Exactly. And I think that's part of at least where I experienced it. I don't want to say an issue. That's where I struggle to is... I bring this Western type A mentality to something that doesn't necessarily align with it, which is like a more spiritual practice. Because I can't just sit there and be like, all right, prayed or said my mantras meditated 10 minutes, done.
And yamas check.
Exactly.
Yamas check.
Would you two both say that you are more on the organized? Like if one was disorganized and 10 was organized, where would you put yourself?
9.5.
Whoa. Okay, Maria.
I am not that organized. I would
say. Mm, I live with you.
Okay.
Maybe nine? Not with your clothes, but with your schedule.
With my schedule, I'm very organized.
Yeah,
my schedule.
Right. Yes. So super. I've recently gotten better, but in the past, I've been more like a 3, mm-hmm. like maximum.
Yeah.
And I don't. Yes. I'm just like noticing a correlation. The things that you get, like the type A, like get stuff done. I've just not really experienced that much. So the practice of Ishvara surrender has been in the past, not necessarily this weekend changed a little bit. But up until this weekend, I had been struggling with surrender a little bit. Yeah. And because I was getting more, do this, and not really giving time to feel. Because I find mine happens I'm pointing right now at the very center of my chest.
Yeah, right.
And this feels like more open is when I feel connected and like I can surrender and all that kind of stuff. And for the past couple months, I haven't really felt that. This weekend, we went and visited my dad's mother who had a stroke and is in the hospital. And I have never been around a loved one who is hurt or suffering before, ever. More past like a scheduled surgery or something like that. So seeing someone I love in pain and suffering like that, that I never had been before, I had that moment of like, schedules don't matter. None of that stuff actually matters. The only thing that matters is connection right here, right now. And I felt that surrendering moment. And I'm not going to cry right now. But if I wanted to, I could. And anyway, before the show, I was saying, like, usually it takes a lot for me to cry. But then when I do, it's just like, I give myself up to you. Take what you want. And have those feelings. But yeah, it's very non-Western thing that I get. Maybe if I was Christian, it would be my, like, come to Jesus moment. Is that what that is?
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, I didn't grow up Christian, so
I didn't either.
But I've heard that term before.
Like, I don't know.
Maria, you did, though.
No, Catholic.
Oh, you don't have, like, a Spanish come to Jesus, like, ben a Jesus?
Not venga. That I'm aware of.
Venga Jesus.
No. Or a Mary.
Yes.
Maria.
Uh-huh. Islam, though, the word means submit. That's my whole religious upbringing was... All of it, your entire life is a surrender, is a giving up to something else. I super resisted that growing up because, like, I was just like, to what? This doesn't make sense. Exactly. I don't get these Arabic words. And now, in a different sense, in a really real sense, that's even bigger than religion. I get what religions are saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't necessarily.
What Ishvara, I get. Right. Ishvara Parinidhana is saying.
Right. Yeah, and I think that I've always had an issue too with like submission, that word.
Yeah,
I'm like,
it has a terrible connotation.
Yeah, really, it does. Like, it has become that way, and I'm sure that people who see it as a different kind of meaning don't have the same reaction.
In Arabic, it's a beautiful word,
right?
In Arabic, it's a wonderful quality. In English, it's like slavery.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's right. Like, let go of who you are.
Abuser.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Those. Yeah. Sort of Handmaid's Tale kind of situation. And I think that as I practice more with the philosophy and go through my own challenges with the practice, I think my understanding of what surrender is, Ishvara Pranidhana, what that is and what faith is and what practice and detachment are is maturing.
Mm.
And I think I'm able to make it my own. And I think that's what I love about the Yoga Sutras is every time I read them, they have a different meaning for me.
I was going to say that. Yeah. I think it's because it's really beautiful. You read it. You're like, okay, cool. I can do this.
It's like rereading Harry Potter.
Or like, oh my God. No. Yes, just like
actually,
it.
Yes.
Oh, sage J.K. Rowling.
Hey,
although many people would say, I know.
Yes.
No, I know. I get it. Yeah, I do. Somebody's phone rang yesterday. Where were we? Oh, we were at Himalaya. It was actually Saturday. Was that Friday? And it was the Harry Potter
theme.
You know, the little tinkly one?
Yes.
And I just love it so much. It has so much so much sweetness and magic, I think.
She's the Patanjali of our time.
Mm.
I'm just kidding.
J.K. Rowling, are you listening? Okay.
What would you do if we found out somehow that Patanjali was a woman?
Mm.
I'd be like,
well, there's a lot of speculation about if Patanjali was one person or a
bunch of people
or I would mythological.
I would do the two hands emoji that's like, yes.
That's what we do.
That would be you. Yeah, you're responsive.
Like, awesome.
That's it.
Well, and
anyway,
yeah. Then there's the whole thing about the commentator, like Vyas, one of the commentators.
Yeah,
yeah. So
if all the things,
yeah. So interesting things. But anyway, so I've been really noodling on that concept a lot.
So what would you say to our listeners, and you know, yoga students in the who want to go deeper in their practice of yoga, not through asana and not asana, in terms of Ishvara Pranidhana? What's like what do the sutras say, or what do you say about deepening that practice?
Well, I think when you were talking about what you're going through with your grandmother, or what you've gone through when things have gotten challenging and you've stopped just doing things and paused, I think there's a lot to be, there's something really profound about taking the time to pause and process your life. And so for me, it's a really simple practice, but I know it works, and I don't always do it. And then when I rediscover it, I'm like, oh yeah, it's simply just writing for myself, like just what's going on for me. One part of this course I'm doing with my teacher, Christina, is she always includes contemplation questions with every exercise. And I'm like, oh, every time I do it, I feel like this deep exhale release of like, oh my gosh, it's so great to be able to just examine what is happening.
We did a lot of that last week with Baron.
Right.
Like it was actually...
Which is Svadhyaya, right?
It's the least amount of asana I've ever done in Baptiste. We did barely any, seemingly, and then like a bunch of inquiry. That's what you call it, contemplation for her. It's
Svadhyaya.
Inquiry,
yeah,
Svadhyaya.
All these are the same thing, right? The same processing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did so much journaling at level 3, and it was a giant relief.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
There was, I can't remember where I listened to this or maybe read it, but it was something along the lines of like the difference between like empathy and apathy and all of those words, and how when you're actually trying to comfort someone when they're going through something, or how you can relate to someone when you obviously cannot relate to something that it's going on, you don't just say, oh, I'm sorry, I know it sucks. It's, you know, it's almost like it talked about... taking it, something like taking the time to, like, I don't want to say put yourself in their shoes.
Like feel the feeling that they're feeling.
Yeah, it's like we can all relate to that very deep, like...
sorrow,
the
turmoil,
basic
suffering,
human emotions. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's
wanted
and it's almost...
seen.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just like, you know what? If you need to cry, cry. If you want to be angry, be angry. And that's what I told her even last night. It was like, if you want to talk, let's talk. If you want to watch TV, let's watch TV. If you want to go out, let's go out.
I was like...
if you want to cry and watch TV, let's cry and watch TV.
Yeah, I was sitting there being like, I don't want to enjoy myself because other people are suffering, even though my loved ones. I felt guilty in that moment of like living a normal life when someone like... instead of spending every waking hour with that person, often a hotel room. So I was feeling guilty, and then that was it. It's just like you can feel sad and do these things at the same time. And that's really what like the surrender is to me, is it's not, like we said before, resignation. It's processing the feelings, still progressing forward with the work I know to do. You could say dharma, my dharma. And like being the space that it all happens in for no reason. Because I was sitting there, we drove from Austin to Houston. Actually, we drove from Austin to here. So a 2-hour drive, just like thinking. And I was like, kept asking, like, why do people suffer? Why do people who don't seem to have done anything bad in their lives, like, what is the whole point of suffering? And then if you have all the religions that try to like tell you why, you know, like, oh, it's karma, or
that's the big
original
one,
sin,
that, or it's more, it's like, oh well, when you suffer it'll help you get closer to God because that's when you would need to ask for his or her help more. And none of those sat right with me. I was like, well, okay, suffering really kind of happens for no reason, really, because there's just so many. If it's infinite reasons, that also is then just no reason. So the flip side of that is I can have love, be loving, and do my work that I know to do without reason. That's what I got. I don't know. My brain is breaking a little bit trying to explain it.
Yeah. No, I get it.
But it's like, I don't necessarily need a reason for all of that stuff. No. And in that way, that surrender, because I'm doing the things I know to do for the sake of doing them, not for an external goal.
What's
not
the phrase to, like, that people use?
Have, not to go to heaven. Mm. Not to, like, be the savior of everybody else.
Right.
But just to do the things that I know to do and mm-hmm. experience all of it and be a conduit.
Right, and, like, be aware of suffering and not get bogged down in it. Mm-mm. I mean, look at Mother Teresa.
Mm.
I mean, she lived in Calcutta and served
yes.
people. Do you think she would have been able to do the work she did if she got wrapped up in suffering?
Mm-hmm. Like, feel it and also still work.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do the, like, practice in detachment.
Because if you don't feel it, that's when that's the separation that is not yoga. That's like, because mm-hmm. yoga is what, union?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whoa, this conversation is so multifaceted.
It is. You know,
I just remembered something, too. When I was in my 200-hour teacher training in New York, I did it at a place called Laughing Lotus. We all got a sutra that we had to explain. I can't remember if we had to explain it or chant it. I think maybe both.
Probably
I can't remember.
Both.
It was all terrifying, of course. And you randomly drew out of a bag the... Okay, yes.
we drew out of a bag, sorry.
We drew out of a bag, the sutra. And the one I got was the one about or surrender to God. And I remember getting it going, this is the thing I like the least about the yoga practice. You know, I was living in New York City. I'd found the asana practice and I loved it. And I didn't know what kind of voodoo it was, but something was happening, changing in me. And I didn't know what it was, but I wasn't interested in this God stuff. And so I got that sutra, and I remember getting it and going, I think I may have gotten this for a reason.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's always stayed with me since.
Mm.
So I think the little seed of what surrender is, and because it's so against, like, my natural inclination, and maybe all of us, and that's why there are these two paths laid out in the Yoga mm-hmm. Sutras. Well, not all of us, but a lot of us.
Yeah.
This guy I talked to last week, surrender clearly was something that was easy for him. And
yeah.
so he was able to do that, and it's a more direct path to self-realization. But the other path isn't any less valid.
Uh-uh.
But the thing is, though, that it also ends in the last step is, or the it is surrender. I would say samadhi is like a true letting go.
Yeah.
You know, like true samadhi is the word for total absorption in the infinite, where you find true
bliss,
yeah.
Let go of the little self of me
yes,
here on this earth.
Right. Right.
Without any constraints around it, mm-hmm. be able to give up to something bigger.
And that is the ultimate
mm-hmm.
Ishvara Pranidhana. So it all mm-hmm. ends in this idea of surrender. So I'm really interested in that, like why when we breathe, we don't say push. I don't like to say push and pull on the breath. I think we're being breathed. It's not our, like it is, that is a little surrender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't have two lungs. The universe has 7 billion sets of lungs. Is breathing me.
Right. I am just happen to be the recipient of this amazing mm-hmm. thing called breath.
Yeah.
And so
in physics, there's no such thing as suction.
Come to my classes this week, everyone. We'll be talking about surrender. Oh, wait. This will be coming out after my classes. So too bad.
You should have been there.
Okay.
So devotional practice, Sarah Montross teaches those at Big Power Yoga. I teach Powerful Flow, but hey,
yeah.
you can come to my classes and you'll still get some deep ass shit.
Yeah, you talk a lot about philosophy too.
I do. That's because that's what.
Yes.
I mean, at its surface, it doesn't seem like that's what Baptiste Yoga is all about. But when you get really deep into it, it is built off of the same building blocks.
Yeah.
And so, someone who is as advanced as I am at teaching Baptiste Power Yoga, you can get some of the philosophy in your Powerful Flow classes. I don't know why I'm talking like this.
I've been subbing Powerful Flow also.
Yeah,
Are you on the schedule this morning? And I was like, oh, she's
yeah.
teaching?
We may come
what?
Tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
We may, if timing works out. But
if my work schedule allows.
And listeners, Maria is just a rare gem. You can't take her classes unless you are her wife, because that's the only person she teaches right now. Me.
Haha. I do teach at work.
Yeah, and if you work at Deloitte.
Yeah.
So
every once in a while, one again.
With all that being said, thank you, Sarah. That was just a packed episode of everything. We encourage you guys to listen to this thing twice because that you can probably
because
get a
that's
lot
how it works.
Just like reading the sutras twice,
exactly.
You can get a lot out of it.
Or more.
Yeah.
Or
so
more.
Yes. As a reminder, we've got the big upgrade coming in August 2020. If you don't have a 200-hour yet, there's a 200-hour that happens before it. So you could sign up for that. Go to Big's website.
No, but then you'd have to get 100 hours of teaching experience in between.
There are requirements.
There are requirements for the big upgrade, and you can find those online. Yeah.
Yoga teachers, listen up. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how about this sound quality, guys?
I sound delightful.
We're at Studio Sassafras Music.
Per usual.
Per usual. Go to their website, studiosassafrasmusic.com. Podcasts, audiobooks, building tents randomly in John Edwards' space, because that's our podcast. record music. Get music recorded for you. He can compose things.
Yes.
Guitar lessons. Anything
All
music.
The things.
You can get it here at Studio Sassafras. Isn't that cool, Sarah?
So cool.
Wow.
Very cool. Sarah, it's been a pleasure having you. Thank you.
Oh, hold on. StudioSassafrasMusic.com.
StudioSassafrasMusic.com.
John Edward is absolutely delightful.
John Edward is amazing.
With all that being said, thank you so much for being our bookends.
Yes.
You're a great teacher, and we're very inspired by you, and we feel really lucky that you agreed to be on the show and climb all up in a blanket fort with us.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you for asking me. It's always so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yay.
We hope you come back sometime next year in season 3.
Yeah. For sure.
Maybe we'll get you and G at the same time.
That would be amazing.
It would be a little bit off the rails, I'm sure.
We could do a two-parter.
It would have to be. Anyways, stay tuned,
listeners. We love you, Blanket Ninjas. Remember, patreon.com/BYOBlanket. Please become a patron. It means the world to us. Or review us on iTunes.
Review us on iTunes.
That's it. Now we're going to say bye.
Bye.
Bye.